Morning, everybody. I thank you all very much for coming out in the very, very exciting weather that you have gifted us over in the East Coast. I will be going back later today and warning everyone in advance, the cold is coming, the cold is coming. But actually, that call of knowing what's coming, what's up ahead in front of us, is actually sort of indicative of the way the world has started to roll. And I don't only speak of the world at large, I speak about our own Torah world, our own halakhic world, and how our halakhic world likes to deal with modernity and modern issues and modern problems. So when I went to graduate school, and believe it or not, it wasn't yesterday. I tell that to everyone because my wife is probably listening right now. When I went to graduate school, it was a really novel concept. Wow, there's going to be a psychologist who's also going to be interested in being a rabbi. Or as my first, in my first position in the rabbinate, I was told, wow, that's great, you'll be a rabbi, you'll also be a psychologist. The fact of the matter is that as far as the Orthodox Jewish world is concerned, there is a certain understanding that mental health issues don't exist. And when one pulls away the layer a little bit, and we have seen a tremendous, tremendous change and shift in attitude to a certain degree in the last, I'd say, certainly in the last 15 years, and very heavily so in the last five, we have discovered that, yeah, believe it or not, what goes on outside goes on inside. The same struggles, the same challenges, the same needs that we find in the world around us, we will find in our own Orthodox Jewish community. And so how we choose to approach them and how we choose to deal with them will certainly help us organize our thinking. And then all of a sudden I realized that I was living in the world of conflict. Why was I living in the world of conflict? Because I was apparently told I'm a walking contradiction. Why am I a walking contradiction? Because I was told by an Israeli friend of mine, everybody knows that you can't be a rabbi if you're going to be a psychologist, and you can't be a psychologist if you're going to be a rabbi. And I asked him why. And he said, because everybody knows that if you're going to be a psychologist, you have to be a kofar, a heretic. And if you're going to be a rabbi, hopefully you're not trying to become one. In fact, that thought and that line of thinking appears in the writings of people who are still alive, living in Har Nof today, including Rav Moshe Sternbuch, one of the great thinkers of Jewish law, who in source number two in front of you, and I'll work backwards, I apologize for the shift, was asked what his view about clinical psychology was and clinical psychotherapy. And he responded, Darashti kama v'kama ta'amim v'rabim neged ha'ochim lahem. I have gotten up and I've spoken about this many, many times, opposed to people going to psychotherapists. Shedarkam lehepech me'ha'torah. Their style is in opposition to the Torah. V'roim kirifuwa la'atzavim latet l'kol echad tavat l'vavo l'maloso. And they choose for themselves to, as a cure for sadness, for depression, to tell everybody, do what you want. If you do what you want, then you won't be sad anymore. That's psychotherapy in the eyes of Rav Moshe Sternbuch, and I apologize to the psychologists in the room. V'lo igbilo kira'ui, there are no boundaries. No proper boundaries. Rak lahatzialo rachmana litzlan tavat haolam hazeh. No boundaries. Do whatever you want. Get whatever desire you want in the world. And he cautions, ta'ava mevi'ya o ta'ava. One desire will lead to a next desire. So basically, you're leading a person into a life of addiction if they become involved in psychotherapy. I met a couple of the psychologists outside. I don't believe that that's the way I was trained. Maybe in your own practices, was that one of the themes that was stressed? We don't usually like to create a situation of addiction, at least in my training. Vayla Dabarsov, says Rav Sternbuch, in his major understanding of the way psychotherapy runs, there's no end. Vlomis rape, you never become healed. Rak mosif umachmir matzavo. You just add to your trouble, and it becomes more difficult. He says, even the best of the psychologists, they don't really work that well. And they said, "Oh, atzvus v'kadoma." Shetzrichem eizem mechachmei haTorah sheim rofei nefashot dafka. The ideal thing is to go find the assistance of the chachmei haTorah, the wise ones of the Torah. Those are the ones who should really be providing therapy. Those are the ones who can help people out of their difficulties, their anxieties, their depressions. Those are the ones, in the eyes of Rav Moshe Shnurmer, who people who are in need should be turning to. I stopped here, I'd have to retire from two positions, and some of the other people in this room might have a lot of difficult things to say. And I want you to know that when I, about 24 years ago, when I was contemplating the idea of going into clinical psychology, this particular tshuva of Rav Shernbach was presented to me, as I mentioned before. And as it gets presented to me by an Israeli friend of mine, I said to him, "Yeah, I know. But you see, I live in the United States, and my father raised me with the understanding that when one has a question of halacha, one turns to FDR Drive, and one goes ahead and Grant Street, and we speak about the great posek of America, the late great Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha." And Rav Moshe, in the tshuva, one source up, in source number one, was asked also about people who attend psychotherapy sessions, those who go to psychiatrists and psychologists, Bidvacholi ruach u'machshavot, people who have difficulties and issues in terms of emotional difficulties, shetzrichim leilech lerofim psychologistin, psychiatristin, which I believe is Rav Moshe's ways of saying psychologists and psychiatrists. Im rashayim leilech le'elu sheheminim b'kofrim. Are they allowed to go to those who are heretics? By the way, implication right away is, not all of us are heretics. The question Rav Moshe was asking is, can you go to one who is? Of course, if you can find one who's not, maybe that's better. So Rav Moshe writes, "Lanias daiti, in my opinion," says Rav Moshe, "ein leilech al rofim ka'ilu behisrapos." Don't go to those particular psychologists and psychiatrists. Ki mikivon she'ein arefuos misamim hamerapim, since they're not really going to give you healing by way of medication. Of course, I guess Rav Moshe's understanding of what psychiatry was is different than mine. Ela meirov hadiburim shelahem, the majority of what gets done gets done through talk therapy, the process of speaking. Imacholah, noadim eizem achshavot hu sovel. You learn to see what are the thoughts that are plaguing the individuals coming for therapy. Umiyatzim lo eich lehitnahek. Shevadai yesh lochush shemiyatzim lefamim neged dinei haTorah. Go to a heretic and you're talking back and forth with him. Well, sometimes heresy will probably enter the therapeutic exchange. In fact, Rav Moshe says, "Vav neged ikrei hadat." Sometimes they'll get into the point of violating the basic tenets of our faith. V'neged inyanei prishut v'tzniut, and sometimes he'll violate certain social mores of proper conduct. Right? So therefore, Rav Moshe suggests, second to last line of the source, v'lachein yesh lechapes achar rofei psychiatrist shomer Torah. So therefore, says Rav Moshe, what would be ideal? He says that there should be people like us. There should be people who are walking around in our world, who are versed in our religion, who are versed in our system, so that when we engage them in talk therapy, and they engage us in talk therapy, they know from where we come, they know from what we speak, and they can make sure that we relate to them, they to us, in a manner that is consistent with Torah values. It's this tshuva that I sent to, who is now my Rebbe, Rabbi Herschel Schachter, I believe you met in a previous Kol Yom Rishon, many years ago before I began studying under him. And he said to me, if psychology is usher, then how come Rav Moshe says that you're able to find psychologists who are not kofrim? And he wrote back to me, I still keep the letter very close on my desk, not in my practice, but in my study. Schachter wrote back to me and says, of course there can be psychologists and psychiatrists who are shomrei Torah mitzvos. There better be. We need them. And through my years of college, and then through my years of Smicha in graduate school, so Rabbi Schachter made it very clear to me, you got to keep working. Put more energy into it. And at certain points in time, that became important because, believe it or not, sometimes the therapist or the therapist-to-be could use a little bit of pick-me-up. So knowing that there is such a position places Rav Shtirmer into a particular position. So now I have on the one hand Rav Moshe Shtirmer saying stay away from these people who call themselves psychologists. Why do you think he would be so opposed to that? Well, according to him, if you're going to study psychology, psychotherapy, social work, you're going to become a heretic. And if you work with somebody who's involved in that process, what's going to happen? They're going to take you away from the proper path. They're going to get you addicted to this never-ending cycle that will not heal you. Rav Moshe Feinstein comes along and he says, not so fast. I'm not so concerned with that process. What am I concerned with? A process that does work. So I'm fiddling around a couple of months ago. As you can imagine, I particularly like to collect thoughts from rabbis on psychology. Some people collect stamps, some people collect coins. I collect these things. I share them, keep them in my back pocket, and pull them out when I really am looking for it. There's a Rav in Male Adumim, who is also an American who made Aliyah many years ago, Rav Rabinovich, Rabbi Dr. Nachum Rabinovich. Tremendous Jewish mind. So apparently, and I didn't know this until about 6 or 7 months ago, he wrote a series of tshuvot, of responsa. And in one case, he was asked, God forbid, if there is a pigua, a terrorist action, and there's a call for response on Shabbos, to call all the social workers who respond, sort of the Red Cross, or I guess the Magen David Adom system, are those social workers allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos? Can they go ahead and drive in their cars to go to the site of the terrorist action? Because they're needed. And we know the earlier we get involved in offering comfort, the faster and the better, perhaps, we can begin the process of treatment. Or do we say that, well, you know, psychotherapy is not really a process, social work is not really a field. Oh, I see my friend, Rabbi Goldman, is joining me, Baruch Haba. So do I have a right to turn and say, you know, no, that doesn't work that way? So Rabinovich says, wait a minute. He says, we have a rule as far as Hilchos Shabbos is concerned, that if something is considered potentially life-saving, potentially, a refuah she'ena beduka, a process of healing which may not exactly meet FDA requirements, we would still allow it to be undertaken with the possibility that it will save a life. Says Rabinovich, Odzos mikan muchach shetitachei toeles psychologist gambi davar she'ena wele sheker v'chazav. We have people who sometimes go to therapy and seek psychotherapy for issues that they know not to be true. And still notwithstanding, ve'eno mo'il klum l'maka, v'afsha ha-to'elas ha-psychologist eno brura, if you want to argue that maybe psychotherapy or the particular approach to psychotherapy might not necessarily be 100% clear, v'chozo sitiro, you still find that it's mutter. Me'ata kal v'chomer hu l'nidon shalanu, certainly in a case of a crisis situation, when we're dealing with an issue of the violation of the laws of Shabbos, it gets pushed off when there's a threat to life. Nowadays, psychotherapy has a consumer report study that's been done every, I think, 5 or 6 years to see which one is most efficacious, which one's most beneficial. So certainly if we find that there are certain psychotherapies that are most beneficial, we assume that the ones that are still out there on the market are beneficial. And not only that, we can show you studies upon studies upon studies, which I don't collect, by the way, which highlight the efficacy of psychotherapy. Ergo, says Rav Rabinovich, of course you should get in your car and drive. The guy who's going to be the paperwork guy, the supervisor, that's the guy who shouldn't drive on Shabbos. But the people are rolling up their sleeves to get involved in the day in, day out, halachically they're obligated. Again, if you're keeping score, we have Rav Shtirmer on the one side saying, stay away, don't go to them. I've got Rav Moshe Feinstein sort of saying, psychotherapy, there are good ones. And now I have Rabbi Novick saying, break Shabbos if you're a psychologist. So important is the field of psychotherapy. It's about 4 weeks ago on a lark. Oh, this is my good friend Rabbi Brand is here. How about I thank you for having me this morning, Rabbi Brand. So about 4 weeks ago, I was in line with a friend of mine from Eretz Yisrael. He says to me, wow, there's a 41-year-old Talmud Chacham, the head of a Beis Din in Bat Yam. His tshuvas are unbelievable. You got to take a look. And he sends me a copy of a tshuva, a letter that has nothing to do with the price of tea in China. But I turned around, liked the writing, and said, let me see what else is in the volume. And sure enough, as luck has it, he made the list of collected tshuvas of things that have to do with psychotherapy. A 15-page tshuva on whether one is allowed to go to a psychologist. His name is Rav Hanan Afalo. Rav Hanan Afalo is the head of the Beit Din in Bat Yam in Israel. And he was asked the following question. Rabbi, yes, I was asked to go see a psychologist. The guy who gives my shir at night told me that it's usher to go to a psychologist, and if I go to a psychologist, I'm going to fall into a never-ending cycle. Sound familiar? And I really don't want to get stuck in the cycle, but on the other hand, can psychologists help? Shouldn't I maybe consider that? After all, the state has highlighted and set off state psychologists. What am I supposed to do? So Rav Afalo, in 15 pages, an unbelievable 15 pages, trashes, literally, to pieces, the argument that going to see a psychologist is a bad thing. And page after page in a brilliantly written tshuva, as you can see, I'm very into it right now. He says, what are your two choices? He says, let's take a look at this. You've got rabbis, and you've got psychologists. Which of them is trained to deal with your particular issue? He says, sounds to me like if you go to a rabbi, you're kind of spinning the dice. Maybe he knows what he's talking about. Maybe he's not. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Maybe he has some ability to offer a commentary. Maybe he doesn't. But I do know one thing. If you broke your arm, you weren't going to a Talmud Chacham. He says, why? Because the Torah demands. It's a Torah demand. Virapo yirape. And you should go and be healed. And the Gemara determines, based on those two words that appear in Parashas Mishpatim, Mikan shenitna rishus lerofe lerapos. But from here we see that a doctor has permission to provide treatment. Says Rav Hanan Afalo, last time I checked, that was not only for a broken arm. And so he writes, Aval ein leilech rak lerabanim o talmidei chachamim shehema yitnu hatzaos lerufua. Don't go to a to rabbis or just wise men for them to give you advice for health. You would never, ever dream of going to your local, I hope I'm not saying, you wouldn't call the Rosh Kollel and say, you know, Rosh Kollel, I'm feeling a little bit of pain in my arm. I fell down shoveling my snow the other day. My arm is blown up to be, six times its size. You think I should get it fixed? Like, how should I fix it? You're the Rosh Kollel when you understand the Rambam. You go to Rosh Kollel when you want to get advice and inspiration. But when you want to get your arm fixed, I'll tell you what the Rosh Kollel will tell you. I'll tell you, go to a doctor. Says Rav Hanan Afalo, since that's what you would do anyway, kal v'chomer b'dinei pikuach nefesh shu l'chomer. Inami v'gam acholah ben asher, you certainly would do that way for to save a nefesh. Nefesh is the soul. It's the emotional system. He says, "V'gam acholah b'nafshu, somebody who has an emotional difficulty, k'gon dikaon, somebody who's stuck in a depression, v'atzvus marosh chora v'kayotze bo, yeshlo leilich lepsicholog miktzoi, go to a licensed psychologist. V'lo l'rav talmud chacham, don't go to a rabbi." And says Rav Hanan, "I'm one of them. I'm a card-carrying member of the rabbinic school. Still, go see a psychologist." If you're going to see the unique individuals, the leaders of the generation, who on a certain level may have certain insights and more complete understanding of all facets of Torah knowledge, maybe you go to one of them. Shenitan lem siyata dishmaya. They have the special help from heaven. They're going to be able to take out everything from their Torah. Ki akol koluba Torah. Ultimately, everything comes down to Torah knowledge. So then, yesh l'shmoach arpiyam gam berefua. People read those wondrous stories of people who went to the Chazon Ish and he told them exactly how to conduct a particular heart surgery. But you wouldn't call your local rabbi to ask him how your cardiologist should go ahead and conduct the same surgery. I'd like to recommend and suggest, REITs has still not as yet put it on their curriculum. We learn a lot about issues of the heart, but we don't learn heart surgery at REITs. Says Rav Chanan HaFalo, we shouldn't. It's not our job. But at the same time, when we're dealing with issues of health, that's when we listen to the doctor. The bottom line is, when we get past the initial moment of asking, what am I supposed to do, how is it, when we have the halakha questions that come up along with the surgery, during the recovery period, am I supposed to turn around and violate the laws of Shabbos, not violate the laws of Shabbos? If there are issues that come up in the context of the surgery that involve halakha, that's not the mental health professional or the medical health professional's decisions to figure out. That's when you got to go ahead and find your rabbinic position to understand your halakhic position. So now, all of a sudden, as I look at this tshuva from Rav Chanan HaFalo, all of a sudden I can start to make sense between all these differing opinions about the rabbinic world and their opinions concerning psychologists and the fear that they had. Rav Sternberg says, stay away. Why does he say stay away? Because they're going to mess with your mind and take you away from Torah. And they're going to get you involved in an addictive psycho. Says Rav Chanan HaFalo, good, so make it your business. Don't get stuck in the addictive cycle. Keep a rabbi in your pocket. Keep him on standby. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, find a Torah-based Talmud Chacham. Rav Chanan HaFalo says, good. A good idea, but still remember that when you have halakhic questions that come up, what are you supposed to do? You better keep your rabbi on speed dial. And now we find that when we start considering what we need to do to bring the rabbi into the psychological mix, or bring the psychologist into the Torah life, whichever way you want to slice the question, we'll find that there are seats for everyone at the table. Not only are there seats for everyone at the table, they're all necessary for a person to be able to be successful in terms of his ability to continue functioning in his or her optimal world. Let me give you a personal example from my own experience. See, I treat anxiety disorders. That's my specialty. And one of my favorite specialties is obsessive-compulsive disorder. Now let me just give you a brief understanding. I quoted for you what OCD is. This is the International OCD Foundation's definition of obsessive-compulsive disorder. It's quite simple. Certain people get certain thoughts in their heads. It's a disorder of the brain and behavior, causes a tremendous amount of anxiety. It requires two pieces, obsessions and compulsions. Obsessions are those thoughts or images that occur over and over and over again to a person, which the person feels is beyond his or her control. They don't want those thoughts, they're just there. And in order to reduce the anxiety, what the person chooses to do, again and again and again, is engage in some magical behavior. They feel that by doing, will reduce that obsessive feel. There are many different subtypes of OCD. So every so often, whenever I have an opportunity to present to an outside audience, people will say to me, but I can't, that guy can't have OCD because he doesn't wash his hands 100,000 times. I said, that's true. He may not have cleanliness OCD. contamination for the professionals. But the person who calls me every Friday afternoon to find out exactly what time candlelighting is and must call 14 times exactly, that person has a different type of OCD. There's a contamination OCD, there's a hypochondriasis OCD, there's a checking disorder. I had a person come into my New York office, traveled in all the way from somewhere way out on Long Island. Person comes in, makes it all the way to the front door of the building, and I'm able to see the person because we had a camera system to be able to buzz them in. Person Joe gets there exactly on time, which is one of the big pluses of treating people who have OCD.
What if they
come
possibly late, though?
It's not a foolproof system. Person stands by the door. We buzz the person in. I watch the person go like this, turn around and walk out the door and leave. I get a call 25 minutes later from the person. Oh, I woke up late. I'm so sorry. Can we reschedule another time? I said, absolutely. And by the way, I can see you when you're standing at the front door. Turns out the person had a concern that she left her oven on. And she could not engage in an intake, in an opportunity to meet for the first time, till she went back to check. She was ready to throw away a perfectly good session, a perfectly good period of time, not to mention the travel costs, which, by the way, is almost as expensive as traveling from near Newark Airport to LaGuardia in order to make it on a flight to Chicago, all to turn around to come back because she couldn't handle that thought. Hoarding disorder is now all of a sudden, in certain schools, no longer part of obsessive compulsive disorder. Pure O, which is a purely obsessional disorder, is when a person has to do something in their heads over and over and over again. I have a patient right now, this guy came in on Friday for the very first time, a Rebbe in yeshiva, who every praise that he hears, he has to repeat to himself. And repeat, and repeat, and repeat. And it drives him crazy because he says, I'm not productive. But every time I come out of my high school classroom, and he's a wonderful Rebbe, and thank God he's deserving of a lot of praise. So his principal comes, you know, Errol, which is not his name, you're doing a great job. And he will repeat it. Did he say great? How great? And he will repeat the idea in his head. And it drives him crazy. He says, I feel like I have this never-ending tape in the back of my head. He says, but it can't be OCD because all I do is obsess. I said, no, you have an obsession that you solve by repeating in your head again and again. That's your compulsion. But then there's the one I want to focus on for the rest of the day, and that's called scrupulosity. Scrupulosity OCD is what many people like to call Frumkeit OCD. It's the one that fits the style where the person asks the question, did I do it right? Is Hashem going to get me? Is he going to burn me down? If I don't do it this way, I'm going to go to Gehenna. So I have to get it exactly exact. And when a person has to wonder, am I just acting within the boundaries of halacha, or do I suffer from scrupulosity? Often I like to give them certain questions. Is what you're doing going further than the requirements of halacha? If it is, you probably got to start thinking about OCD. Is your focus on minutia? I know a guy who I treat who's very hyper-focused on the spot right over here on his head, but only for a couple minutes a day. Because when he puts on his tefillin, if it's not, it says, Bnei Necha. And so he forgets about the fact that there's more space and there's more room. He will sit there for 3 hours a day, confused. And it's gotten so bad for him that he now no longer puts on tefillin in the morning. In fact, he doesn't put on tefillin all day until the final 4 minutes before sunset. Because in 4 minutes he knows he has no choice, and that way he delays. So he doesn't get up at all during the day until an hour before sunset, so that he can be ready for those 4 minutes. And now you know why he's a patient. He's so overly concerned with the minutiae that look what he's losing in the process. Does the issue interfere with normal practice of the religion? We'll take a look at certain examples. Can the person not see the total religion aside from the issue? You can't appreciate Yiddishkeit in its totality because you're so over-focused on a particular small part of your religion, you might want to start thinking about whether you may be suffering from OCD. Is a person so preoccupied with doing the ritual, doing the process, until it's perfect? And is a person doing that because they're so overwhelmed with the fear of being punished, you might want to start thinking about whether that person is suffering from OCD? Now you can understand when a person starts thinking about these issues, who are they going to go to figure it out? Now, on the one hand, if you go to the psychologist, well, some will tell you that, you know, he or she is a kofer, and, you know, of course, everything is bad. And I have patients who will come in the door, look at me, and say to me, "You're beardless," which I am because I have a different fear. It's called my wife. And you obviously don't know halacha. Okay. You know, and most of the time those people don't realize that I also have a shul like 20 blocks away from where I'm sitting with them at that moment in time. But they'll say to me, "You can't be an authority, so I don't need to be an authority. You pick an authority. I'm here to just help you with the problem that seems to be plaguing you." So, okay. On the other hand, his Rav will tell him, "I can't help you. What do you want from me?" His Rebbe will say to him, "You can't function in my yeshiva right now. What am I supposed to do with you? You're going over." And one guy who was an expert in the words Tashma. Tashma coming here in the Gemara. Because he would not be able to move past the words Tashma until he could envision himself coming and hear it. So he would say Tashma for an hour and a half every day. His chavrusa left him. He still had no clue, because he's just Tashma, Tashma, Tashma. And it was a disaster. He couldn't function. These are sad cases, but they're real. So when you're dealing with a case like that, where does the rabbi fit in? Where does the psychologist fit in? Where is the situation supposed to work? What role does each one foster for himself or herself that can bring about an efficacious treatment and help a person who has been suffering this way lead a very, very productive life? And the answer is, there's a great role. It's called teamwork. Let's take a look at some of the issues that come up where a rabbi and a psychologist might want to work together, and how Torah luminaries of our generation propose this in their own writings. Let me show you a for instance. Cleanliness concerns. A person knows that before I go to Davin, I need to be clean. I have a responsibility to prepare myself to make sure that I'm clean. Yikon lekras elokecha Yisrael. You need to prepare yourself to make sure you're clean. So the person says, "But I'm not sure I'm 100% clean. Maybe I have to go to the bathroom. Maybe I went to the bathroom and didn't clean myself appropriately. So if I go into daven now, what will that do to my davening?" In one case I had, I remember the person wasn't so worried about what it would do to his davening, but what about all the people around me? So I'm causing all of them to sin in the process. So I discussed the issue with his predetermined rav. In all my OCD cases, I insist that we have a predetermined rav. He quotes the following Gemara to me. It's source number 5 in front of me. Amar Rav Ami. Rav Ami says, "Asur la'adam sheyetze b'nitzotzo shal gabi raglav." There's not a lot of walk around with leftovers from his trip to the bathroom on his legs. Because he looks to be like an individual who unfortunately has a certain urological tract difficulty. And it seems to suggest that his children might not be legitimate. If a person has not cleaned himself behind, then he or she cannot recite Kriyashma. They're heki dami. Someone says, "Well, how does that work?" Idiniris, if it's evident that the person's got a mess, my son likes to walk around with a, we're toilet training now. So it's evident when he's got a mess, when he's what we call a full load. So in such a situation, pshita, of course you can't say Kriyashma in that situation. It's not the proper situation. But either lo nearest, but if it's covered, so how's the person supposed to know? Lo not Torah le malachei asharis. The Torah wasn't given to malachim. The Torah was given to human beings. And they're supposed to be able to function within a human being perspective. And so Rabbi Yisrael Yaakov Kanievsky, the father of Rav Chaim Kanievsky, one of the great Torah luminaries of the 20th century, in the 1960s, wrote a letter. And he says, somebody's not sure if he or she is clean enough to daven. He says, I tell them, there's a lot of room to be lenient over here. And by the way, even if you don't want to be lenient, because telling somebody that there's room to be lenient is reassurance, which in my world is in the world of OCD treatment is a bad word. We don't want to reassure, as we'll see in a couple of moments down the road. As I tell them, use X number of pieces of paper and go down it. Vani Mitzaveh says in the second paragraph of Source 6, four lines down, the third word in, Vani Mitzaveh LaHashoalim, I tell everybody who comes and asks me, Sheshuv Lo Yashgichu V'lo Yivdeku Im Nisha Mashahu Olo. I tell them, don't look. Don't look, don't think, just keep going. Ki kvar nikra tahor. You're already called clean enough. Lama chara rechitza, he says, etc. Dropping down, he says, v'ani odeya izot zirim. He says, writing in the late 60s, early 70s, I know many young people, shehim achshav kvar lo zirim, ele b'emtza shnoseim, now they're in the middle of life, shemamash hitzalti osam v'zeh minervin, chas v'shalom, I saved them from major difficulty. V'echad shehit akesh, there was one individual who was stubborn, v'chashav tamid who had so deik, he thought he was the one who was correct. Now he doesn't daven anymore because he can't, because he's not clean enough in his own mind. I consider him ill. So here we have a situation where a rav came in and offered what I consider a psychotherapeutic approach. It takes a rav to be the stipler. Remember, Rav Hanan Afalo, the Gedolei Torah. But he gives you an idea and a framework, which, by the way, and you can check because there are experts here in the room who will tell you, yeah, that meets very much similar to what I do. One of my personal favorites, we have people who have problems with concerns about saying Kriyat Shema or Shmona Esrei correctly or with the right Kavana. In sources 7 and 8, the Shulchan Aruch makes it very clear that both Kriyat Shema and the first Bracha of Shmona Esrei must be recited correctly. And if it's not recited correctly, in certain cases, the Mechaber, the Rabbi Yosef Cairo says, Yafsor v'yispalo, maybe you've got to go back and repeat Shmon Esrei. And I have patients who have gone to Mishnah Berurah Seder, or sat in 7th and 8th grade, and the Rebbe taught this halacha, and from there on out, recite Shmon Esrei until they feel that they are comfortable enough with their kavana level. And I remember, because I had a classmate who did this, and I remember saying to him, why are you doing that? He would open up the Shulchan Aruch and say, this is correct. And it bothered me. So I asked him, who says that that's the right way to go? So I ran over and showed him a comment of the American hero, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in source number 9, who turns and says, well, you know, it's proper to say Kriyat Shema correctly and with the right intention. But if you get a foreign thought in your head, he says in the second paragraph, Lani astaiti lo mistaber klal omar shehafsaka behirur havehafsaka. That if you thought about breakfast, or you thought about, and I don't want to do a commercial for any one particular restaurant versus another one, because I'm only a guest here, but whichever restaurant that makes wonderful, terrific ribs, that is well known all over worldwide, you're thinking about Kriya Shema, and they're thinking, and then all of a sudden the thought of that burger or those ribs, I'm a carnivore, turns around and enters your mind. Now I got to repeat Kriya Shema, says Ramosh. I don't think an errant thought means you got to repeat Kriya Shema. Abemtza pasuk rishon, ubemtza birchas avos, even in that first pasuk of Shmona Esrei, kisha acha shahira amara tables pekavana. Assuming, of course, after you had the thought, you turned around. And you had the right intention. You have the right kavanah at that moment in time. I said, see? You don't have to repeat. And what do you think he answered me right away? He says, yeah, that's assuming you had the right kavana. Very good. But I didn't have the right. Who says I had the right kavana? I don't know. I'm not sure. See, OCD is all about doubt. So Rav Moshe would say, in that situation, I have to go back again. Wouldn't he? And the answer is, gee, I don't know. Did you ask him, or is that your assumption? And considering by the time we had this conversation, Rav Moshe had already passed his 10th year at site, I know the answer to the question. But the stipler did answer the question. In source 10, the stipler said, where this was one guy who also had the problem, and he was always worried about repeating again and again and again. The Horesi Loshi is followed by Sitter. You know what I told him? Use the sitter. You use the sitter? Finished. Right? Umasha kvar avar, lo yachzor alo b'shem ofen. Once you're davening out of a sitter, if you think you skipped something, if you're not sure, forget about it. Keep going. You will never repeat. Afilu yanid melo b'biru, even if it appears to you, for sure. That's all I'll hear from you. I'm not sure for sure. But you're not sure for sure because you have OCD. So the disciple says, even if you're not sure for sure that you didn't daven correctly or that you skipped words, says the stipler, sakalacha. I'm telling you, you don't have to repeat. However, says the stipler, writing to the individual he's writing to, who, by the way, was a rabbi and a psychiatrist, aval iefshar lahasbir et zeh lemishu batzavim meutachim. You can't offer this as an explanation. V'lochein sarich lomar behechlet ubelitam. Faskin, don't explain. Why? The same reason you said before. Here I was talking to my friend. I showed him a Rav Moshe. You know, he says Rav Moshe wasn't exact. I can't be sure that my case fits Rav Moshe exactly. Yeah, of course you can't be sure. That's unfortunately where your disorder, where the OCD comes in. Says the stipler back to all rabbis who are joining in as part of the collaborative OCD team. Don't explain. Only paskin. Because if you only paskin and don't explain, the person will have to follow through. Maybe at the just say there's no darais over here. I don't want to go on. That's what you tell him. Give him instructions. We don't go further. We don't repeat. We only go ahead. Keep moving. It's funny because after we talked about this a couple months ago, a brand new volume came out of the Tshuvos of Usher Weiss, who's a wonderful, super duper Talmid Chacham and Magid Shir in Israel. And the perhaps the most popular tshuva, at least from my angle, in that second volume was this tshuva on OCD, which appears. And most of the tshuva, according to the Rav Weiss, had to do with a man who was never sure if he made brachos correctly. And so he wanted to ask Rav Asher, should I stop eating bread? Because I can't be sure that I'm going to make the brachos correctly. In the second paragraph of Source 10a, he says, Nirad emo lahakbit ka klal. Don't do that. Uminatam shekvar nisbar le'el sharei zeh tiva umahusa shal machalazu. This is the way OCD works. Sha'adam yaser esatzmo kol hazman becharados shalo asas hamutal alav. What happens to the person who's suffering from OCD is that the person thinks to himself, I didn't do what I was supposed to do. He didn't fulfill his requirements. Only when you get rid of the fear, when you stop responding to it, that's when you're going to get help. If you engage in avoidance, if you avoid bread so that this way you avoid the bracha, all that's going to do is create more doubts. Avoidance, like reassurance, is dangerous. P.S. As a psychologist, I'd like to put my stamp of approval here. Because in our world also, we teach our patients, avoidance is just compounding your problem, raising more doubt in your world. In fact, Rav Asher writes at the end of the paragraph, if you don't follow through, ve'ein ledavar sof, there is no end in sight. And unfortunately, many people who suffer from scrupulosity OCD will retreat and retreat and retreat. A couple of years ago, I had the pleasure of presenting with Rav Mordechai Willig. So Rav Willig is a tremendous posek and a tremendous mind. And the issue came up, our topic was obsessive compulsive disorder. I don't remember where we were speaking, whether it was up in Yeshiva or whether it was at Stern. The issue came up concerning the mikvah, another area where there are very specific rules and regulations that people have in terms of preparation. And anywhere where we have specifics and minutiae, we have a potential for somebody who suffers from OCD to experience a sense of being overwhelmed. So I said to Rabbi Willig, how do you handle those? He says, how do I handle them? I quote the Ramban. Critical Ramban, he thundered. And the Ramban says, "Umidine achatzitza, when it comes to issues of mikvah preparations, lo tov heyos adam machmir yoter midai. It's not good to be so machmir. Umechapes achar asfekos lipsul tefilasa, and look for all sorts of reasons of doubt to say that your tefila is no good. V'davar akal, kimkei nein l'davar sof. Once you start working off doubt, there's no end in sight." So Willig hands me the sefer and he says, "This should be printed on the front door of your office." I said, okay, maybe it won't be on the front door of my office, but it'll be in every presentation I give on OCD. Because you see already at the time of the Ramban, he also wanted to encourage people to take a difficulty and put it in context. Not to say, this is kfir, this is the Ramban, folks. He was not a kofir. Right? What he did was he created an environment where people were able to understand the environment of OCD and its balance with the environment of halacha. Rabbi Yisrael Gantz gets cited by Dr. Avigdor Banchek, Rabbi Dr. Avigdor Banchek, in a book that came out about 5 or 6 years ago called Religious Compulsions and Fears. So he says, you have to understand, the Gedolei Yisrael expanded this Ramban in so many different cases that in every case of a doubt in halacha, one is to decide on the lenient side of the question. And by the way, says Rabbi Gans, even if it's unclear whether there's a doubt, because, you know, sometimes my patients will come in the door and they'll say, I'm 100% positive, 99%, that I didn't do it right. So Rabbi Gans says, if you're 100% positive that 99% you didn't do it right, you are right now suffering from an obsession, and we have to be meal. In real halacha, in straight halacha, when we deal with a regular halacha case, we don't work that way. We follow Rove, we follow a majority in certain issues, sometimes we go a little higher than Rove when we try to ascertain the facts. There are rules and regs. But to a person in a situation where a person is suffering from an obsessive compulsive disorder, the halachic responsibility demands that the posek turn around and take it into context. I mentioned that situation before. That comes up in regard to the person who's fearful about when she lights candles for Shabbos and she calls and calls and calls. So Rabbi Banchek quotes, again, like we saw from the Stipler before, the Rav has a responsibility in that case to make it very clear, not to explain himself. I know a very famous Rosh Hashiva and Posek, with whom I'm close, who mentioned to me in passing, how do I deal with this one woman in my community who has this concern about when and where and how to light candles? And every time I explain to her why she did it right, every time I get into a situation, she keeps me on the phone. My Friday afternoon spent 2.5 hours with this one woman ascertaining candle lighting time and correcting candle lighting time from last week. I said, I now know why. You're making 2 mistakes. She says, what? I said, you're reassuring her about last week and you're reassuring her about the upcoming week. She says, so what do you want me to do? I said, this is going to be hard for you, Rebbe. Because all the years I know you, you've explained every psak halacha to me. And whenever I've asked you an issue and asked you to explain it, you're a master orator and you're a master bal masbir. You explain things very clearly. Don't do it for her. Tell her candle lighting's at 4:11, not 4:12, not 4:10, and tell her that's fine. Go on. Next week, ask her what time candle lighting is. And keep to that. So congregant of mine, but Stashman the other week, you know, about 2 or 3 weeks after this episode happened, he says, I don't know what you did for that Rebbe, but I was visiting that Rebbe, and he says, your Rav is a gom. Now, I don't think I'm a gom, by any stretch of the imagination. He says, he saved me 2.5 hours on fire. As funny as the story is, it speaks to a certain sadness, but also a certain wonderful opportunity. The opportunity is an opportunity for collaboration. It's the opportunity that we saw before in the writings of Rav Chanan Afalo. It's the understanding that yes, we are bound by the responsibilities of halacha, and we aspire to keep halacha. And sometimes in that context of aspiring to keep halacha, always when we aspire to keep halacha, we are guided by the Shulchan Aruch, and we are commanded by the writings of our Chazal, Asei Lecha Rav, have one individual you turn to for Psak Halacha. And that person should be one who's versed in Halacha. And just because we're dealing with a mental issue, a mental health issue, does not all of a sudden excuse us from our values. Quite the opposite. It tells us, let's cling to them better. But it places a context and a responsibility on us to be able to do so. And the way to do so, and it's not only borne out in the Torah literature, but even in the psychology literature, bringing clergy in to assist, to guide, to play their role, helps the mental health professional know what his or her role is in that situation as well. When we take those two pieces and put them together, the rofe, the social worker, psychologist, psychiatrist, doctor, is able to do his or her job, v'rapo yirape, but at the same time, the rav is able to do his job correctly and solidly. Is mental health treatment a collision with halacha? Absolutely not. Halacha and mental health treatment were meant to collaborate. Mental health treatment was meant to fall within the world of halacha. We're Orthodox Jews. Everything falls within the world of halacha. What we need to do is make sure all of us involved in those situations make it our business to ask ourselves, what does halacha demand from each of us in the circle, each of us involved in the situation, and what we can do to make sure that all of us, all our fellow Jews, are also able keep halacha correctly. Not only how can I strive to keep halacha, but when I'm over-striving, how to meet halacha correctly. I see I'm short on time, so I will close with the comments of Rav Volbi. Rav Shlomo Volbi wrote in one of his letters to one of his students, Ki aderech lehitgaber, the proper way to become strong, einena lehitzta'er, it's not to be in pain. We say every Shabbos, when we return that Sefer Torah into the Aron Kodesh, Ki lekach tov nasati lochem, torasi al tazovu, God gave us a great treasure, Eitz Chaim hi lamachazikim ba, it's the tree of life to those who reach out and grab it. Diracha, Dachei Noam, the ways of Torah are the ways of pleasantness. That's not just the statement that fits a great tune. It's a way of life. If we do believe in this system, if we seek out how to make it so, even in what used to be uncharted territory, we will find that halacha and hashkafa don't collide in the field of mental health with mental health treatment. They collaborate to help even more people reach out well beyond themselves. I thank you very much. Well, thank you.
Okay, I want to thank you, Dr. Schwartz. Just a special note, I know Dr. Gold is here, but they're both welcome. You should just understand the Mesiris Nefesh that this morning